We're going to start with the beginning of the parasha, and I'm going to ask a couple of questions, and then we're going to try to figure those questions out. So let's begin. So the parasha begins innocently enough, Vayar Balak ben Zippor et kol asher asa Yisrael le'emori. So it's interesting that over here it says that Balak sees what Israel did to the Emori. So what I want you to pay attention here, which may seem really obvious, on the one hand, pay attention that it's Israel, Yisrael, which will be actually have more intrigue to it than you suspect. And the other is Emori, which means that essentially we really need to pay attention to what happened at the end of last week's Parsha, but hopefully we will come back to that. So he sees what happened there. Vayagar Moav b'pnei ha'am ma'od, ki ravu v'yakatz Moav b'nei b'nei Yisrael. So Moav gets very, very frightened, gets very scared about this. And then the language is actually worse than that. Vayomer Moav el zeknei Midian, and the people from Moab speak to the elders of Midian. And again, I want to pause there for a moment. One of the things to pay attention to in the rest of Sefer Bamidbar and all of Sefer Devarim is that there is a fundamental difference regarding the ability to stay in this area between, and I may have mentioned this last week, between those who are from Shem, which means really the greater Avraham family, versus those who are from Ham, which really is the Canaanites and the greater Canaanite family. And those who are Canaanites will all need to leave and will be chased away. All of those from the greater Avram family, including Edom, including Moab, including Midian, are going to be allowed to stay where they are. So it's very interesting that they see what happens to Emori, and Emori are part of the Canaanite or the Ham family, and for some reason they extrapolate that they're going to be in trouble. Well, the truth is they're not going to be in trouble, because the truth is that this has nothing to do with them. Which means over here is an anticipated problem is going to take place between Yisrael and Moab and Midian, or I'll say it all again. Moab and Midian saw what Israel did to the Amori, and therefore they said, hold it, these people are coming. Now, the truth is, had they really understood history and had they understood what was really going on, they really had nothing to worry about, but that they choose not to understand. The easy word or phrase to use in this week's parsha will be anti-Semitism, and here will be an example of this. This fear of the Jews, and actually in this case, will be an unfounded, or perhaps it's a founded, but it's not a fear which really applies to them at all, because, as I said, they really are bystanders in this. Nonetheless, it says that Moav turns to Zikne Midian. The other thing which Chazal will note is, as we continue, first of all, it describes them in these powerful terms: Atar yilachachu hakahal et kol sivotinu kilachoch hashor et yerek hasadeh. And then it adds in, as an aside almost, Uvalak ben Zippor melech lemoav be'itahi, where it should have started with Vayar Balak ben Zippor melech Moav, which means why add this phrase as almost an afterthought when he was introduced in the beginning. Normally, at the point that somebody's introduced is when we're going to say who he is. It should have been Vayar Melech Moav, or Balak, or Balak Ben Zippor Melech Moav, and he saw, and then as a leader, he has concern and responsibility. So there's already going to be some kind of an assumption that maybe he was not king and became king. And the reason to say this, which is certainly a midrashic approach, but the reason to say this is because he's introduced and he's not king, and then he becomes king. So maybe there's actually something even a little more cynical over here. Maybe this is the kind of far-right leader who alerts people to a problem which is not a real problem. And what he ends up doing by alerting people to this problem is he ends up solidifying, or in this case, perhaps creating a position for himself, saying, talking on and on and on against, look at these people, look at these Jews, and look what they're doing, and they need to be stopped, and so on and so forth. And then he eventually becomes the king of Moab. And all of that would actually be a very frightening scenario if that were the case, but I'm going to say it again, the text suggests it. The other thing is, what exactly is the relationship between Moab and Zikne Midian? So maybe we'll see that as we continue on. Vishlach Malachim, and he sends emissaries, El Bilam ben Baor Pitora, Asher al Hanahar, Eretz Bnei Amo, Lekrolo, Lemor. And he sends a message to Bilam ben Baor, to this place, Pitor, near the river, which perhaps sounds like the river would be the Euphrates, and Eretz Bnei Amo, Lekrolo, Lamor, saying, Hine Am Yatzami Mitzrayim. Now, what's I find intriguing about that is, in the back and forth over here, you will note, he never calls them the Jews, he never calls them Yisrael, he never says who this Am is. Rather, Hine Am Yatzami Mitzrayim. So, again, I don't know what to say in terms of anti-Semitism. Is it that he doesn't even give them value and doesn't even want to say them by name? Or is there something else going on over here? Or is he trying to say it's actually unimportant? Hine Am Yatzami Mitzrayim. Some nation left Egypt. And here he is right in front of me. Curse these people out for me. And then once you curse him, then maybe I can defeat him. Which means it's not a cursing, a verbal attack instead of a military attack. It's rather a verbal attack which will then facilitate a military attack. And then I will chase him out of the land. Of course, what land? And I'm going to go back again. Was it that Israel have wanted to settle in that land? Was it that they wanted to take that land? They wanted to course through this land, which is all this is missing, as is something else which is missing, and that is the identity of this people. It's almost reminiscent to, and I'll give you a second to think, but it's almost reminiscent to Haman's discussion with Ahasuerus. There are these people who are have a different from everyone else, and so on and so forth, and you know, we need to get rid of them without ever saying who these people are, which over here as well, there are these people who come out, and now I want you to curse them so that I could get rid of them. And again, ha'am, right? This am ki atzumi mimeni, because they are more powerful than I. Ulai uchal nakebo v'agarshenu min ha'aretz ki yadati et asher tevarech muvarach v'asher ta'or you are. Because I know, now the question also is, how do you know that? Or why does he think he knows that? Because I know that whoever you bless is going to be blessed, and whoever you curse is going to be cursed or is cursed. So over here, there's lots of, you know, information. He knows about this nation. This nation is over here. Doesn't want to mention them by name. This nation over here, he perhaps has used this in order to change his position from being something else to now becoming king. And he turns to this person called Bilam and he says, I know about you. I know. Now, what is it? I know your reputation. Then it should have said, I've heard about you. It doesn't say I've heard. It says, I know. So how exactly does he know this? Yechuzik ne Moav zik ne Midian. So again, an interesting confederacy, Moav and Midian. Uksamim biyadam. Which also we wonder why this is. Why do they have to carry magic with them? And they report the message. Stay the night and I will report to you what God says to me. And of course, notice the switch between Yudkei Vovkei versus Elohim. It will be a constant in this week's parsha, the switching between the two, and it's important to track that down, which we won't. But Yom Amin Hashem Eile Imach, who are these people with you? Yom Bilam El HaElokim, Balak Ben Tzipor Melech Moav Shalach Elai. So again, over here, he is introduced the way he should have been introduced the first time. This is Balak Ben Tzipor, the Melech of Moav, you know, sent these people to me. But that's not, and I'll say it again, it's not the way he was initially introduced. Hinei Ha'am, now notice again, it doesn't identify who this Ham is, which means it leaves it with anonymity. There are these people. Hinei Ha'am Yotzei Mitzrayim, the same way it's presented. There are these people that left Egypt, but we're not told who they are. And they, you know, they're spread out. And he's asked that I curse them in order that they can perhaps fight against them and chase them away. And it's interesting how God responds according to the way that the question was posed. He goes, do not curse this people. Of course, we know who this people are. Kibaruchu, because they are blessed. So, let's recap what we just now saw. What we're intrigued with is the lack of identity of who this supposed enemy is, the Jewish people. We're very intrigued why they can't even say them by name. By the way, I'm not guaranteeing you I'm going to answer that, but I'm saying that's intriguing. The other thing which is intriguing is the switch in the name of Balak along the way from the very beginning until afterwards he becomes king. Again, has he manipulated and used the situation in order to solidify his own particular position? So that is something which is interesting to us. The other thing is that he says, I know that who you curse is cursed and who you bless is blessed. How exactly does he know it? Or maybe I'll say it a little differently. Why does he think he knows this? Which means what is giving him this confidence that that is in fact the case, that this man has this kind of ability. And ultimately, then, you know, we want to get to the question, which maybe is the first question any of us would think about. Did Bilam really have this power? Did Bilam really have any power? Is Bilam somebody, you know, what is he? And again, it's interesting, they go with their magic in order to impress him with their ksamim, but all of this, I'm going to say, as a background, to be able to be sensitive to what happens next. What happens next is we read the next couple of verses, and over here is when he's actually trying to curse them. And we've skipped a lot. We're in source number 2. We've skipped from Perikuf Bet to Perikuf Gimel. Vayisa mishalo vayomar. So part of what I want to know now is, what exactly do those three words mean? Vayomar, we know what it means. He said. What is vayisa? Well, it normally means he lifted up or somehow. Mishalo, what is the mishal? Mishal could be a proverb. How else to translate that? If I had plenty of time with nothing to do, I would have looked at every English translation for the word mishalo. But it's actually going to be an important word as we move on. You'll see this. V'yisa mishalo v'yomar minaram minach, and then he begins to speak. And over here, by the way, there's no question who he's talking about when he says, Min Aram Yenichenu Balak Melech Moav, Mehare Kedem Lecha Arali Yaakov, Ulechoz Ama Yisrael. So he knows exactly who it is that he's cursing. He knows them by name. He knows who they are. Here they're Yaakov and Yisrael, which means, you know, once he's written his curse, and again, what is this proverb, or maybe Akom the Bard? The Bard needs to speak and he needs to put together the words that he's going to use. Over here, there's no question who they are. He doesn't use the anonymous and these people, whoever they happen to be, these vagrants who are traveling around. No. It is Yaakov. It is Yisrael. He knows exactly who they are. He knows their various names. There is no confusion on his part. Now, I'm going to go back again and notice along the way, you know, I'm skipping what happened during that blessing and going to Pasuk Tet Zayin, which is the second time. Vayikar Hashem el Bilam, vayisem devar b'fiv, right? Again, he puts the words in his mouth, which also now is intriguing. Was it that he has this ability by himself, or is it really that God is giving him this ability? Vayomashuva balak v'kot daber, and God says, this is what you will say. Vayavoy lav, hine nitzav al aloto, v'saremo avito, vayomolo balak ma diber Hashem. Okay, what has God said? And now again, look at Pasuk Yudchet at the response, Vayisa Mishalo Voyomar, which is the exact same form that we had in actually every time he's going to go into his bard, or I'm not sure which word to use right now. You want to use the word prophetic, whatever you want to use. When he's going into his attempting cursing stance, it's always going to be Vayisa Mishalo Voyomar. Kum balakushma zina adai bino tzipor. Lo ishel v'chazav ben adam, and so on and so forth. Pasukov Aleph there, lo hibit avon b'Yaakov, v'lo ra'a amal b'Yisrael. Hashem elokav imo utruat melech bo. So again, he knows exactly who they are. El motziyami mitzrayim. You know, he initially was described as a people that came out of Egypt. It is God who took that out of Egypt. And this other phrase is beautiful. We say it in Rosh Hashanah. There's an argument what it means. Utruat melech bo. So what does the word trua mean? Does it mean that he knows how to blow the trua? Ashrei am yodei trua. So Rashi suggests that the word trua is from the word after re'acha kamocha. Utruat melech bo is that he has a friendly relationship with God, with the king of the universe. Which means that, again, instead of cursing, but again, he recognizes who they are. Lo hibit avan b'Yaakov. There is not iniquity among Yaakov. Lo ra amal b'Yisrael. And there are no kinds of unseedy things in Yisrael. Hashem Elokav. God is, or the Lord is his God. La Hashem Elokav imo utruat melech bo. And he has a relationship of friendship with God, essentially, who took them out of Egypt, which means ki lo nachash b'Yaakov v'lo kesem b'Yisrael. So, right, yemor li Yaakov l'Yisrael ma'pa'al el. So I'm just going to stress again, as much as there was this anonymity when they were introduced as this people who need to be cursed, over here in the response to it, without going into all of the elements of the response and of the blessing and so on, but we do see some things which are interesting. One thing that we see is interesting is this constant go back and forth between Yaakov and Yisrael, knowing exactly who they are. And instead of cursing, there is this blessing, but it's more than that. He also describes them. It's God who took them out of Egypt. It's not that they just sort of left. It's God took them out. And they have this friendship with God. Well, what a phrase that is. It really is a remarkable phrase, and that's really a remarkable Rashi. Truat melech bo. That they, you know, I have a friend who's a king. I have a friend who's the king. You know, some people say, oh, I have a friend who's in a powerful place. I know somebody in City Hall. Right, I know my congressman's secretary. I know truat melech bo. I have a friendship, or they have a friendship, with the king of the universe. That is such an unbelievable statement. Which essentially, you know, if I don't know how much Balak is really listening, essentially he's saying, you know, give it up. They have a relationship with the king, creator, sustainer of the universe. This is not going to work. This is not a very good idea. So let's continue. We're going to notice that the same thing takes place again. And again, it's not a coincidence. Moving over to source number 3. So, you know, we started in Perek Kaf Bet, now Perek Kaf Gimel, now we're in Perek Kaf Dalet. So poor Bilam, he's not able to do what he wants. Ve'er Bilam ki tov b'nei Hashem l'varechet Yisrael. V'lo alach b'kam, right? And yeah, the Jews are going to be blessed. And once again, here it says, "Vayisa b'lam etena, vayarit Yisrael shochein l'fishatav." Again, he knows clearly what it is. "Vatechi alav ruach Elokim," and now the Spirit of God comes upon him. And then once again in Pasuk Gimel, "Vayisa mishalo vayomar," and again, whatever this word mishalo means, it's upon him. Again, he lifts his proverb, he lifts his mashal, and he speaks. And again, I'm not going into the whole content as. Again, if you look, skipping a little bit, Pasuk Yudal in the same place. Again, now he's essentially giving up. Vayisa mishalo pasuk derba vayomar. And again, that's the fourth time that he uses the exact same phrase. Noum bilam bino baor, which is actually a very funny way of saying it, because it's not the way he had said it before. And he continues. V'lo derach kochav mi Yaakov, v'kam shevet mi Yisrael. And again, this dual Yaakov and Yisrael, which will continue going on. V'Yisrael o sechayil, v'yerid mi Yaakov, v'yirsarid me'ir, and so on. So, essentially, and then finally, once again, in Pasuk Kaf Gimel, v'yisa mishalo v'yamar, o mi yichye misamo el, and so on and so forth. And he at that point he gives up actually. What I wanted to note is that probably in order to understand this parsha well, we need to know what that word mashalo means. And in case some of us have said, thinking to ourselves, well, I've learned this parsha many, many times. So I'll insist that if you don't know what that phrase means, v'yisa mishalo v'yomar, then I don't know how you can think that you really understand this parsha, because that's exactly the phrase that he keeps using again and again and again and again. I want to make sure enough agains over there. So what exactly do these words mean? And there's actually something else about these words which are going to be significant for us. So let's first see what it means here, but then we're going to see something else. Rashi, in source number 4, this goes back to Kaf Dalet Gimel. To remind ourselves, Kaf Dalet Gimel was right here. V'yisa mishalo v'yamar no'um bilam b'no ba'or. So something strange then. B'no ba'or, Rashi starts with. K'mo l'mano mayim midrashah agada shneihem hayu gdolim me'avotehem. Both, meaning both Balak and Bilam, were greater than their fathers. Balak b'no tzipor Aviv binohu b'malchut, which means that he did something which was very difficult to do at that time, is that his father was not a melech, but he became a melech. Ubilam gadomi aviv b'neviut, and Bilam was greater than his father in terms of prophecy. Mana ben pras haya, which means a pras is half the size of a mana. So it's saying that the son is double the size of the father. So what's the implication? Again, it's possible to say that Tzipor was a melech, but was a very small melech, or maybe wasn't actually a melech, was an advisor or a sar or something. But the implication of this Rashi, again, quoting from the Gemara and from the Midrash, is that in over here, it's deliberately saying Ben Ba'or, but we'll see more about this in a moment. The Mizrahi, their aim explains, Mizrahi Gadash name Gedolim, Bilam Balak, Vav b'nei ba'or, u'b'nei ba'or, u'b'nei tzipor, einam nosafim, rak perisham. Bil'am b'nohu ba'or, aviv b'neviot. He's greater than his father as a prophet. U'balak b'nohu tzipor, aviv b'malchut. Shekol achad mishneim, shehu mana ben paras. Each one of them is more, shekol achad mishneim nechshav limana, vavinu nechshav lechatzi mana, ki perush pras chatzi. Pras means half. Pras ha-pesach would be like 2 weeks before Pesach. It may actually mean a fortnight. It actually mean a fortnight actually means 14 nights. So over here, pras is half. It's half a month or half of something. So therefore, the fathers were considered inferior. Now, what is Rashi getting at, and why is he telling us this? I'm moving back now to some commentaries on Kaf Bet Dalet. To remind us, Kaf Bet Dalet is Vayomu Moav Lezeknei Midyan. So Targum Yonatan writes Vayomu Moav Lezeknei Midyan. Ki am achad u'machut achad hayu, ad ha'hu ayom, ata yichlu ha'kahal at kol sevyotav, k'mo sh'achshor esev etzedei. U'balak ben Tzippor ha'midyani. So that's what he adds to this, that Balak ben Tzippor is the Melech of Moab. He was actually a Midianite. Melech mav beitahi, v'lo be'et acheret, but not beforehand. Shekach hayatnai b'neim liyot melachim l'tukofot me'ele ve'ele. They had some kind of a confederation whereby the kingship would be split and for 2 years. He's the prime minister, and then he becomes prime minister, and that's the way that Keter Yonatan describes the relationship there. Rashi be'etahi, lo ya ra'ui l'malchut. He said he's not worthy to be melech. What Rashi means by that, he was not from royalty. But instead he writes, Menesichei Midyan haya. Again, he's from one of the princes of Midyan. So again, there's reason to understand that what Rashi's telling us is his father as well was not a king. He was from the elite of Midyan, but now he has been able to somehow become the king of Moab. V'kevan shemeit sichon, minohu aleim l'tzorach sha'ah. That something happened then that they appointed him then. So again, I'll just state the obvious, that he was the one who identifies the problem. What's the problem? The problem is the Jews. And what does he decide he's going to do? He's going to find the final solution. So he's the one who's talking about the Jewish problem, spreading the Jewish problem, telling about the Jewish problem, and saying how he's going to take care of the Jewish problem, and he's got a plan. So therefore, he's been able to use this situation in order to become this leader that he has now become. Going back now to Kaf Dalet Gimel. So Kaf Dalet Gimel is where it says V'yisa Mishalo. Right? This was one of the times V'yisa Mishalo. So over here we find a number of... So let's look at the Targum Onkelos. V'natal Mitalia V'amar Emar Bil'am. Now for those of us that may not have been so clear, but I want to contrast that, because Mitle is Mashal, where the tuff and the shin switch. So all that he did, v'natal mitlei v'amar, he took his mashal and he said. So it didn't add anything. The Targum Yerushalmi in Source 9, u'tal mitlal neviyatei v'amar, that he took this mashal and he prophetically said. So therefore that one word which was added, and the Targum Yonatan does the same, u'natal matal nevuah v'amar, v'yisami sham nevuato v'yomar, which means he's understanding that phrase, mishalo, is prophetic. Actually, I'll read the rest of the Keter Yonatan in 11. V'yisami sham nevoto v'yomar, na'um bilam ben ba'or, v'na'um ish shemichubad min aviv. The man who is more honorable than his father, or more important than his father, which is actually what we see in Rashi. Shesodot stumim shehitkasu min anaviyim, hayumit galim lo. Because secrets that were held off from even the prophets, to him they were revealed. And because he wasn't circumcised, there was so much holiness which was upon him, he collapsed, which means he was not a kli that was, or a utensil that was able to hold on to all of that holiness. And again, it's saying it could be lo nimol is actually a euphemism for he was not Jewish, and there, or it could be literally the circumcision, but I suspect that's what it means, that he was not that. Because he was not Jewish, but again, specifically it says Nimol, he was just not able to hold on to all of this holiness. Let's look now at the Ibn Ezra. That it's saying that he did this loudly, like a voice came out. It's like almost, I don't want to say speaking tongues, I really don't want to say that, but it's almost like this involuntary sound is coming out very loudly. And what is it that he said? So it's quoting a little bit from the next couple of verses, but actually it's interesting that Ibn Ezra is saying, because what seems to me that what he experienced was almost like a prophetic dream, like Eliphaz said. We'll come back to Eliphaz in a second, and or let's look at him right now in source 13 in Eov, not the Eliphaz related to Esav. Vayan Eliphaz et hemani vayomar, and you're welcome to look at this entire chapter. Pachad karanu or adam v'rov atzmotai hifchid v'ruach alpanai yachloch tisamer sa'arot b'sari. He's describing the frightening experience of achieving prophecy. This spirit came upon me, and the hairs on my body stood up. Yamod v'lo akir mareu t'manat l'neged einai d'mama v'kol ishma, which means he's describing really the frightening experience of suddenly achieving prophecy, which means what he's saying is that somehow whatever Bilam is doing worked. And at that moment, he gets to this point of understanding. The Or HaChaim has a long-ish interpretation over here. I don't even think I included the whole thing. It's only part of it. V'yisam ishalo na'um bil'am v'na'um v'chulei. Tzarech ladat. Lama tzarech lama v'yisam ishalo. First thing is, why does it have to use the phrase? What is it telling us? Odmat tzarech lama na'um bil'am. Of course, his mouth is speaking. What is it using this awkward language? Od lama tzarech l'odia shem aviv kan. Why does he have to mention his father? Od lama tzarech l'samen atzmo b'simanim shebegufo. Why do you have to describe exactly body parts and so on as he's doing this? Gam b'mar shomea ma nitkaven b'zeh. So I'm not going to go through all of his answers, but he's asking, essentially he's really asking, so what is it that's going on over here? What is it that he's experiencing? Now, part of what he's going to say is, and we're not reading it, but part of what he's going to say is that there's actually a give and take between him and God over here, that he does have a voice, but God is responding, but he is, I want to say against his will, but he's involuntarily speaking two parts over here. He's speaking his role, and then God is speaking through his mouth, which is almost reminiscent of how the certain Kabbalistic works talk about Moshe's prophecy, with Shechinah medaberet mitoch grono, that it seems to be that Bilam is being overtaken. And I said before, speaking in tongues, that he is able to say some things on his own, but these other voices are coming out of him, and he is here somehow caught in the middle. What I find really interesting about both the Ibn Ezra and the Or HaChaim is that they're struggling really with the question that I asked at the beginning. What in the world is happening? What is his power? Where does his power come from? So part of what this is saying over here is that God is using him as a kli. But there's a problem with that, because I'm going a little backwards now. What's the problem? It's like running 220 voltage to something which is only 110. He's not made for this. He's not prepared for this. So this current is coming through him, and the words are flowing through him. And first of all, he is not totally on board with God, and therefore he's disagreeing. He's saying some things, then God is correcting him. So there's like this going on. And on the other hand, he's completely overwhelmed on a sensory level, because ultimately he's not really a prophet. He's not really somebody who has been chosen by God to speak and so on. He's somebody who, well, how did he get the job? That itself is a funny thing. Who anointed him? Well, Balak said, I heard that, I know about you, I know what you can do, and now we're stuck again. Well, why exactly does Balak think that? But what we're getting over here, again, from some of the commentaries, is that he's over his head in this. He really can't do this, but once he's doing it, God's fine, you're going to do the talking for me. And of course, what he says is not essentially what he had wanted to say. It's not the words he had wanted to say, which brings us back to this point, v'yisam ishalo v'yomar, what exactly is going on, and what exactly does this mean? So now, those of us who were paying attention last week, and all of you from Chutz Laretz will have a wonderful excuse saying, last week you did not learn Chukat, you did not read Chukat, so therefore you weren't expected to remember from a year ago. But I want to point something out, which is there in Chukat staring at us, which also we may not remember. But when I was looking at it last Shabbat, or maybe last Thursday, if I don't remember, I said to myself, you know what? This would make a great introduction to Parshat Balak, or for that matter, to meet Bilam. Now, what is the verse? What is it talking about? Let's go back and take a look, because it actually is an introduction on any level, but we'll see, hopefully, on a deeper level than we were probably thinking. So what's the introduction? We go back to source number 16, and now we're back in Kaf Aleph. Again, we started today in Kaf Bet, and now we're back in Kaf Aleph. V'ikach Yisrael kol ha'arim ha'eleh, v'yeshev Yisrael b'kol areiha emori. Now that's not, you know, surprising, because emori was supposed to lose their land, right? We're not supposed to, emori are not from Shem, they're from Cham. So Israel went and captured their land. So this is an interesting background to the whole story. Those of us who didn't understand it, this has to do with interesting military intrigue. The land originally belonged to Moab. It was captured. Now, Moab, the Jews never would have touched. Israel never would have touched the land of Moab. But it was captured by the Amori. So once the Emory captured it, the way that the Gemara phrases it is that they were matahir it. They made it allowed now. They made it pure in a sense. It was as if this is off. I can't touch this land. I'm not allowed to utilize this particular land because it's not mine. It was never going to be Jewish land. But once the Emory took it, which means I couldn't fight, Moshe couldn't fight, Yeshua couldn't fight, unless it's a defensive war against Moab. They were not supposed to capture their land. But what happens when Moab's land was captured by the Amori? So whose land is it? Is it part of the Moab land which we get? No. The problem is not Moab's land. The problem is Moab themselves. Land which Moab sits on, we can't take. Moab's land, which was captured by somebody else, that's a different story. And now you realize exactly what took place in the beginning of this parsha. Moab is watching what's going on the other side of the border. And Israel has now come and has taken the land of the Amori. But that's not the way that Moab looks at it. How does Moab look at it? It's the occupied West Bank. This is our, or that was probably the East Bank. It is the occupied territory which actually belongs to us. Why does it belong to us? You lost it in war, right? You had a war and you lost that. Now somebody else took it away from you. You can't go back to them and say, well, you know, we want our land back. No, it's not your land anymore. That's kind of what happens in war. You lose your land. So what happened over here is that Moab lost their land to the Amori. The Amori land was captured by Israel. Moab is watching this and saying, wow, look what these, you know, people are doing. They're taking our land. Well, no, they're not taking your land. And that would explain why they were getting involved in something they never should have gotten involved with. Also, Midian is completely, Midian is also mysterious, because if you start looking at a map, Midian's not even near all of this. It's a couple countries away, but they get dragged into this as well, which shows what happens when somebody's good enough at manipulation. They can drag other countries which aren't all that close. It's not like Yemen went and joined the war against, well, I guess really they did. It's not like, so. Well, I guess they did also. I mean, lots of countries joined the war against Israel and were dragged into it. So sometimes having what is perceived as a common enemy. So yeah, that does work. But that's what happened over here. So now you realize that this is absolutely the introduction, but something else happens, and it's the next pasuk that I'll ask you, did you remember that next pasuk? And do you now know why we should have connected it to this week's parsha? And we'll see Rashi, black and white, does. And this is one of these things you have to scratch your head and say, did I remember that Rashi? Or was that there last year or not? So let's take a look and you'll see what it is I'm speaking about. We're still in source number 16. So Pasuk Kaf Hei was Vayikach, they take the land, right, and so on. And then Pasuk Kaf Zayin. Alkein Yomru HaMoshlim. So are you now intrigued? The Moshlim say. That's the same phrase that was used all along the way every time Bilam is going to speak. Alkein Yomru HaMoshlim. Now who are the plural? Who are the two Moshlim? Bo cheshbon tibane v'tekanen ir sichon, ki esh yatsa mi cheshbon lava mi kiret sichon, ochla ar moav balei b'mot arnon. Oy lecha moav avadatat kamush, natan banav pleitim v'natav v'shvit l'melech emori sichon. And the Moshlim got up and they gave this whole beautiful, whatever a Moshel is, a proverb, a talk, a bard, whatever it is, talking about how you lost and how the Amori won and Moab has been vanquished. Oy lecha Moav, avadat kamush, you know, woe unto you, you've lost. And it's really interesting that this was what the Moshlim said, but the Moshlim are talking about the previous battle. So again, those of us who have now become completely confused. There was a previous war. The Amori took away the land from Moab. And the Moshlim had something to say about this. So of course, we want to know who these Moshlim are. And what do they have to say about this? Essentially, you're a bunch of losers, Moab. Amori took everything from you. But of course, now something else has happened in the interim. And what has happened in the interim? That the Amori now have started up with the wrong people. Now they started up with the Jews, with the Israelites, and they lost. But not only did they lose, they lost the land which was previously had belonged to Moab. And that's exactly what, well, it's part of what the next verse is telling us, where it says, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayeshev Yisrael Be'eretz Amori. Now, if we'll just continue a little bit more, if we go towards the bottom over here, don't worry about Amori, you're taking everything from them. Sorry, this is talking about another people. And that is actually Perek Kaf Bet Pasuk Aleph, the end of last week's parsha. But the archbishop believed that really should be the beginning of the next story, which is that Balak now sees that the Jews are right there. But it's not that they're right there. It's not just geographically that they're right there. They're right there after taking the land which Moab believed belongs to them. Source 17, Alken Yomru HaMoshlim Ba'u Cheshbon, Lefisha Sichon L'kach Cheshbon Miyad Melech Moab, as we saw. This land was captured. And Israel took everything that belonged to them. That through this they were able to capture all of this land of Moab. We'll skip 18 and go down to 19. What are we intrigued with? How are they going to translate Alken Yomru HaMoshlim? Right, that was, again, just make sure we got that. Pasuk Kaf Zayin in Source 16, Alken Yomru HaMoshlim. We saw the difficulty we had understanding it when it talks about Bilam, so now how is this going to be explained? So in 19 it says, Alken Yomru B'chidata. So it's interesting. A chida is more like a riddle or like a rhyme or like is more like human. Remember what the Targum Yonatan had said previously regarding the phrase when it says that Bilham Vayisa, where was that? Yeah, in source number 10, Unatal Matal Nevute. So essentially, the Targum Yonatan is translating Mashal in two different ways. When it came to source number 10, where God is putting the words in his mouth, now it's Nivuah, Nivute. On the other hand, it was talking about whatever happened in Perikof Aleph, there the Roman says, Alken Yamrum Bechidata Mitule, that he spoke in rhymes or something else, but he did not include the word over here of Nivuah. Rashi al Kain al Oto Milchama Shelchem Sichon Moav Yomru HaMoshlim. Guess who? Look at Rashi, source 21, Bilam. So, in case you're thinking, where in the world did Bilam come from? Shneir Rabo V'Yisam Mishalo HaMoshlim. Rashi continues, Bilam Ubaor VeHeimamru. So, before we continue Rashi, just look what Rashi did so far. It's about to get much better. But look what Rashi did so far. Rashi is obviously using our very, very famous, well, maybe we never used it before, theory of conservation of Moshalim, or Mashals. So if we have Vatisa Moshal Va'omar four times at least by Bilam, and now we notice it was used before, but it was in the plural. So the first thing he says, who is it? And Rashi's very funny. The first thing he says, oh, that's Bilam. But he had a problem. How could it be Bilam? It's in the plural. So he says, oh, it's Bilam and his father. Now you realize the Rashi before that, he says, oh, that Bilam bin Ba'or, he was better than his father. Yeah, well, I know that he was better. Why? Because, well, I don't actually know this. But now when they've come back looking, we don't know yet why they were looking, but now when they come back looking for Bilam, they're looking for him, they're not looking for his father, because they understood that he was better at this. Of course, what exactly this is. Now let's look at the next thing in Rashi, and I think everything would really become clear from this next phrase. Rashi, we're still there in source number 21. Right, so far, Hamoshlim Bilam, and then Hamoshlim Bilam Uba'or. Vehemam Rubo Cheshbon. Shiloya Sichon Yechol Chavsha Vahalach Vesachar et Bilam Lekalalo. Vizesha Amarlo Balak Ki Adati et Asher Tivarech Mivarech. Do you understand what Rashi just now said? Rashi just now told us that the reason that, I want to be very clear now. In Balak's mind, the reason that they lost the war, the reason that they lost to, that Moab loses to the Emori, is because the Emori had a secret weapon. What was their secret weapon? They had a guy who knew how to bless and curse, and they hired him. And who did they bless? They blessed the Emori. And who did they curse? They cursed Moab. And therefore, who won the war? Emori won the war, and Moav lost. And Moav is saying, hold it a second, we got to get ourselves some of this. So now that they already lost the war, and now in the interim, the Amori have lost as well, so now maybe there's no conflict in services. I don't know what kind of exclusivity deal Bilam had previously signed with them, but they know that Bilam was the secret weapon. What Rashi's saying is beautiful. It's based on the Midrash, but it's beautiful. How does he know this? He knows that because they had him last time. So he was on their side last time, and he gives this beautiful curse. But now again, notice what the Targum told us. Targum Yonatan told us that there it was completely non-holy. It was just, he was a guy who knew how to talk, and he gave this pep talk, and he wrote this poem, and he wrote this dirge, and he wrote whatever it is that he wrote, that the people from Emori believed it, and they followed it, and they fought, and they were victorious, and they're convinced that he has some kind of a power, and they say, okay, we're going to go and hire you, and now you're going to go work for us now, and now we're going to be victorious. By the way, I haven't said anything of my own today. That's Rashi. That's what Rashi just said. I just followed the mashals over here. This is what Rashi is telling us. So let's go with this a little bit further. So as much as Rashi is saying, okay, and Rashi didn't tell us exactly what his power was. The Rashbam in source 23, Alkein Yomer Moshlim Al Mechamas Sikon Va'og Mitnabe Tchila Moshlei Nivuot Kegon Bilam V'Chaverav. So the Rashbam doesn't go as far as Rashi tells who it is, but he believes that there was some kind of prophecy over here. Now, the Ibn Ezra, on the other hand, writes in 24, Hamoshlim Habot Im Mashalem Milibam. So, are we going to try to possibly reconcile the Rashbam and the Ibn Ezra? You could decide if you want to. What's the difference between a prophecy versus something you're making up yourselves? Well, it depends. Prophecy, a prophecy is if God spoke to you and told you something, and it comes true, that's a prophecy. What if you say something and it comes true? Well, it's not really a prophecy, but can you claim you're a prophet? Sure, you can claim it. Which means the Rashbam is telling you he made it up. Sorry, the Ibn Ezra is coming and saying he made it up. The Rashbam is saying it's prophetic. Well, was it prophetic in the sense, well, wow, that was prophetic, but not that it was prophetic in the sense that God said it. Meaning, can I reconcile the two and say they're both true? He totally made it up, but it was prophetic. So in what sense of the word prophetic? Does the word prophetic mean that I say something which will happen? Or does the word prophetic mean, by definition, God told me something and therefore I said that it happened? Which means I can use the word prophetic without God speaking to me. And essentially, that is the tension between the Rashbam and the Ibn Ezra, and I can reconcile them. I could say the words that he said is prophetic. He gets up and he speaks in front of the Amori, you guys are going to be victorious over Moab. And they were. You will win. There's no way you're going to lose. Well, that can work. You know one of the tricks in the stock market, right? You get a whole bunch of customers. Half of them you say it's going to go up, and half of them you say it's going to go down, and half of them think that that you have prophecy. And then you do the same thing again with the half group. You tell them this new stock, half will go up and half will go down, and now the quarter that you still have with you afterwards are going to believe everything that you say. And then you do it again, and the people that are going to fall for this, you've already predicted like 10 in a row. Except there's one problem with this. You know, all the other people you lose, but those guys you're taking for a lot of money afterwards. I hope I didn't give anybody any ideas just now, but that's, would anybody want to call that prophecy? It's not prophecy. Although the perception is, I'm telling you, this guy's a prophet. He called stock after stock after stock after stock. He called it. He was right in every single one. Oh boy, I'm going to get sued today, right? I take no responsibility. I'm giving no legal advice over here. I'm giving no advice in investments. I'm not telling you who to invest with. But I am telling you to be concerned when somebody's too good to be true. Because if you're too good to be true, it's not true. But let me go back again. It's really interesting that somebody over here writes this beautiful poem, as it were, and declares that, you know, Amori, they are victorious and Moav loses. So what does Moav say? I'm hiring this guy. But of course, along the way, something happens. And along the way, what happens is that God actually throws prophecy into him and says, okay, you're working for me now. And it's not necessarily what he wants to say. It's not what he wants to do. He wants to get paid, and he wants to be able to say what he does. And he writes, you know, these nice speeches and so on. But he can't get away with it right now. Let's look at the Tanchuma Look at the Chizkuni verse in 25. Al keni mor moshlim Bilam uba or aviv shescharam sichon leklala et Moav Tanchuma. So let's look in the Tanchuma. V'yikach Yisrael to arima eila v'yeshev Yisrael. Israel captured these places. Zeshema katuv keni Hashem ohev mishpat tzone gezel. I'm skipping a little bit over here. We'll go down to where it is. This has to do what they were allowed to take. Okay. Who are these Moshlim? Who are these people who say over these things? It's Bilam and his father, who were hired by Sichon to curse Moav. And they're the ones who gave this whole speech. The Midrash Rab in 27 is almost identical, and it says, yeah, they were hired to do the job, and they did the job. Let's move over to Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch in verse number 30 writes, Akeni Yomru HaMoshlim. HaMoshlim, Rebbe Reshit, Amud Samach Gimel. Mi shetofes umita'er et korot ha'itim. Lo kisofer divrei hayamim, ela kimisaper et alilut Hashem behistoria, karui Moshel. Ki ro'eh et ha'ma'ora ha'bodeid b'klaliyut shel chukei Hashem b'historia ha'olamit, v'sipur historia misupar minikadot mabad zeh, hu moshel pshuto kimashma'o. So, let's try to put that into English now. What exactly is a moshel? It's somebody, again, I want to translate word for word, misha tofesu mita'er et korot ha'itim, somebody who's able to absorb, deeply understand the events which are taking place. Locus sofer divrei yamim, not like a historian, but rather, elikim misaperet alilot Hashem b'historia, rather the person who sees the hand of God in history. Kori Moshel, Moshel can mean almost like to control. Ki ra'et ha'orah ha'bodeid, b'klaliyut shel chukei Hashem b'historia lamid, because he sees the individual events within the larger context of God running the world. V'sipur historia amisupar midikodom badzeh hu moshal. And this is what the mashal is. It is God, understanding God in history, and that is what the moshlim are over here. Which means they're the ones who look how history unfolds and they say, this is what was supposed to happen. This is the hand of God over here. This is part of a much larger thing. And I just want to share some thoughts, you know, as we're finishing up. You know, ultimately, we do have a hard time. I know that there's this wonderful teaching, Lo kam Yisrael ki Moshe, that no one ever rose like Moshe. And then there is this almost these blasphemous words, which, by the way, may be blasphemous, that, oh yeah, but Yisrael lo kam, but among the non-Jews there was. Okay, and that was Bilam. Bilam had this incredible ability. Bilam apparently had this incredible ability to speak and to explain and to sing and to write poems and to write meaningful things. And he may very well have been able to understand God in history, which, by the way, would be completely fascinating if he truly was a monotheist and so on. We know that Chazal don't spare any sin when it comes to ascribing it to Bilam. Every sin imaginable and some that most of us can't imagine, Bilam did it. He everything you can think about. And they look at him as being very, very negative. it's interesting that we have over here, we started with an opportunist. The opportunist was Balak. The question is, to what extent is Bilam an opportunist? Bilam over here, again, according to what we just now saw in Rav Hirsch, he's able to see things and he understands what's taking place, which means he's not the superficial reader of history. He's the person who understands things deeply. And, you know, most people don't. Most people, you know, it's interesting that, you know, people predicting the future, most people predicting what's going to happen next week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, they can't properly explain what happened last week. So people can't explain what happened last week. I'm not all that interested when they're going to tell me what's going to happen next week. They don't understand what's happening. But there are certain people, and that's exactly Rav Hirsch's point, who have a very, very deep understanding of what it is, of these larger things taking place. And again, of course, if you like Rav Hirsch and a monotheist and believe that there's a God who runs the universe, so then it is God who is behind what is taking place. And if you don't understand the hand of God in things, so you don't understand what's happening. And it's fascinating that that this look about what it is that God is doing in history is what they're ascribing to Bilam as the introduction to this week's Parsha. So now we can start all over again. Balak has used his read of history. There's this nation coming out. He knows who they are, exactly who they are. There's this nation who's coming out, and now there is this historical scar among the people. The scar over here is that their land has been taken from them, and you know there are nations that cannot get past that. There is this land that was taken from us. It was taken by the Amori, and that was one of these things that we need to get it back one day. You know, again, a scar. And now it is the Jews who've taken back this land, or not taken back, they've conquered or this land. So now let us go to war against this people, which means he also has a historical understanding. But he also knows something else. He knows the person who understood history at least as well as him and maybe better was somebody named Bilam. And Bilam was the one who was able to create this whole explanation, understanding, curse if you will, but deep understanding of God's play in history that facilitated Moab to lose in the first place. And therefore he says, now you're going to work for me. And now you're going to curse the Jews. And now I'm going to be successful, and now I'll be able to chase them away. And he utilizes this to get his position. You know, I said earlier in a short YouTube today that I imagine him as being as some kind of a political strategist, that he's able to understand things that most people don't see, and he's able to then to manipulate and to create a reality on the ground. And there's a certain power to this. There's a power to the press. There's a power to the person who, you know, writes the editor of a major newspaper. There's a power to this because they try to create that narrative of history. Again, more often than not, without God within the picture. They try to create the narrative. And Balak correctly understands that Bilam is somebody who understands this history. And he says, you're going to work for me now, and we're going to create a new history. Of course, the problem over here is that it's really somewhat overstating it. The problem for him, at least, is overstating it, because now you're going to work for me. But if he's going to be within the realm of seeing God's hand in history, then God also has a say. And God demanded to have a say. And God said, well, you think the Jews are just these accidental tourists who are coming through over here. That's not the situation. There's a question of destiny over here. And the destiny is these people, yes, indeed left Egypt, but they're on the way to the land of Israel. And they'll be conquering this land and they'll be settling this land because I promised it to them a very long time ago. And you're not going to speak against this, and you're not going to prophesize against this, and you're not going to write any kind of Mishalim against this, because that's not what's going to work. And you can try to speak, but I'm going to correct you. And ultimately, you know, the whole metaphor with the donkey is fascinating. Ultimately, when it comes comparing him to a prophet, he's like, God says, I can allow a donkey to speak. Let's not overstate what your ability really is over here. You're not that good. You're really not that good. If you want to talk about God's understanding of history and God's hand in history, ultimately only one being decides what that is, and that is God. And God is saying, you're way over your head over here. If you want to go on this, if you want to continue on this, go. But I get to decide what you say. You don't speak for me. I didn't hire you to speak for me. You don't determine what the future is going to be. God says, I decide what the future is going to be. And if you want to now become a kli, you want to become a utensil, I will use you. It's going to be overwhelming for you. You have no idea what you're getting into on a physical level, on a spiritual level, on a sensory level. You have no idea what you're getting into. come speak for me. It's going to be completely overwhelming for you in every single way. But the words coming out at the very end are not the words that you expect, because God says, or as he understands ultimately, these people are people who have a friend upstairs. Truat Melech Bo. They have a friendship, and that friendship is God. And ultimately, God likes us. What is it? I can't say, but God likes us. And therefore, Bilam is over his head, and Balak is over his head. And we have a happy ending to this. What I love in this whole story, and then in terms of the Sefer Bamidbar, he looks down, Ma Tovu Olecha Yaakov, look how the Jews get along, and look how everything works out, and look how wonderful it all is. And what I love about this is, where were they at that point? Were in the middle of the Korach episode at that point? Were they in the middle of the Merag? Which point are they in the desert when all of this is taken? Okay, it's the very, very end. But still, think of all the insurrection, and all of the rebellions, and all of the fighting, and all that's what happens over the desert. But on the outside, they look at us, oh, look how well the Jews get along with one another, because ultimately when anti-Semites look at us, we're all one, we're all the same, we're all one people, we're the elders of Zion, you know, that's who we are, we got the protocols to prove it, and we all work together on this, and we have this 50-year plan, and we're taking over the world, and so on and so forth. So I hope everybody who listens to this understands where I'm facetious and where I'm not, but if not, it's also okay. Because at the end of the day, Utruat Melech Bo, we have this friendship with God, which actually, where God has this friendship with us, which actually is indescribable, but is ultimately why we have survived to this day and we have thrived till this day. May everybody have a good Shabbos.